You are listening to Over and Back's Basketball Mysteries of the 1970s. Today's mystery is, who were the best players of the 1970s? All right, welcome to the show. I am Jason. With me, as usual, is Rich. And we're here to talk about who were the best players of the 1970s. Before we get into that, we should kind of explain what this series is all about. We are going to talk about the 1970s by looking at a whole lot of different topics, different subjects, different players, some of the best teams, and we're going to approach each show as if it's a mystery that we are solving. We are these basketball detectives who are going to try to figure out who, you know, the answers to these questions. And it's going to be more about the conversation. You know, not every mystery gets solved. So, you know, I'm not sure what our, you know, rate will be as basketball detectives, how effective we will actually be in solving these problems. But, you know, we're here to just share history. Hopefully you'll learn something, you know, dig into some things that you haven't heard about. For us, there's a lot of things here that are new to us, or things that we've just kind of barely know about and digging deeper into. So really excited about this series.
Yeah, it's gonna be
great. You know, it's gonna be a lot of fun. So I think a good place to start is like, hey, who are the players who were the best of the 1970s? Some of them are definitely household names, and some of them are, you know, you have to be more of a hardcore fan to or, you know, dove deeply into history to really be into these players.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you talk about the best player, I think the first name that comes to many people's minds, and rightfully so, is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, Lew Alcindor, of course. He, you know, if you use win shares as, you know, your metric of choice, which we use from time to time on this show, and you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is your guy. I mean, he 190.8 win shares for the decade, so he's pretty far ahead of the other guys. I'll mention some other guys here in a little bit, but when you look at that historically of Kareem's, you know, 190.8, second most win shares accumulated in a single decade. Wilt is number one in the 60s. He had 200.6 win shares, but Kareem's right on his tail. I'll just give you an idea of other guys. Dolph Shays in the 50s, he was 128.4. Magic Johnson was the win shares leader in the 80s. He had 136.8. Karl Malone was surprisingly your top guy in the 90s at 162.2. Maybe not surprisingly if people follow Karl Malone's career, which, breaking news, Karl Malone was very good. And in the 2000s, Dirk Nowitzki, actually, that surprised me a lot, at 149.4 as the top player of that decade per win shares. Kind of looking again at the 70s, other guys. And just a little bit of a warning, I'm going to do NDA only after this, because you're going to go, oh my God, those guys just statted pat, you know, got a bunch of numbers in the ABA. That doesn't count. That's the lesser league. Or, you know, I'm so upset about that. I don't know who you are, but Artis Gilmore at 124.2. He was second to Kareem, so you could see that huge gap between those two. Dan Issel, using win shares, would be third at 118.8. Julius Erving, Dr. J, of course, 115.9. And then Elvin Hayes at 98.4. If we just do NBA only, so let's not look at ABA guys, let's just do NBA. Kareem, of course, still at the top at 190.8. Elvin Hayes at 98.4. Walt Frazier at 97.4. Bob Lanier joins the list at 94.8. And then Wes Unseld at 93.8 there. Jason, anybody there that kind of, you go, oh, really? That guy? I didn't expect him to be there. But
yeah, I guess I am a little bit surprised at Frazier being so high, just because, you know, by the late 70s, he was definitely, you know, a lesser player. He dealt with injuries. He was traded to the Cavs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he was certainly an elite player for, you know, the first 5 or 6 years of the decade, but he kind of fell off after that. So to him to be, you know, third among NBA players and six overall is pretty impressive. I want to push back on this idea that the ABA was, you know, definitively the lesser league. I mean,
agreed. Yeah.
By the first two or three seasons of, you know, the ABA was around, which was 68, 69, and 70 seasons, I would agree. Yeah, it was probably the lesser league. But, you know, they were competing for talent. And obviously by the end of, you know, once the merger happened and the team started, you know, the leagues were integrated and the stars, you know, the former ABA teams were, you know, two of them won divisions the first season. You know, they were, I believe, you know, close to, or, you know, the half of the All-Stars that year. I mean, you know, the ABA talent was for real, and a lot of those teams were really, really strong. So I think You know, I'm fine with just having the NBA look just because, I think it's interesting to kind of look in both directions, but I really do think that, we shouldn't make the assumption that the ABA was the lesser league, particularly after the first, few seasons of the ABA, once the talent was really started to be built up.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you can make the argument maybe the lesser talent, the end of the bench guys were probably way worse than the end of bench guys, in the NBA. But when you look at the top talent, a lot of those top, pretty much every one of those top guys that when they went to the NBA were still very good. Julius Erving, I think, was still pretty good in the NBA. Artis Gilmore, guys like a Dan Issel guy. We'll talk about a few more other guys as well that, when they jumped to the NBA or when eventually they got merged with the NBA, they all went there and they all pretty much did pretty damn good. And let's not forget, they had Rick Barry for a few years too, and he was one of the best guys in the NBA at that point. So yeah, the idea that it's totally a lesser league, I think is just not fair at all. Again, the guys that didn't play, there's probably guys in there that the second the merger happened they went back to whatever factory job they had or whatnot. But yeah, when you talk about the elite level talent, there are some really awesome players in the ABA that competed against each other on a nightly basis. So yeah, this idea that like Artis Gilmore was just playing against like children is just not fair at all.
Absolutely. So, looking at, Winchester for 48, you have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who leads, not surprisingly, at 0.262. Then, a couple guys who were part of the 70s, only the early part of the decade, Jerry West, 0.214, only spent 70 through 74 in the ABA. And then Wilt Chamberlain, 0.211, which he retired in 73. I tried to go to the ABA, but that didn't work out. We're going to have more on that in a future episode. Artis Gilmore, 0.211, exactly tied with Wilt, interestingly enough, kind of that he was the most comparable player in terms of style and and size to Wilt. And then Chet Walker, who I think would surprise a lot of people, played for I forget exactly what year went to the Bulls, but he was he played for the Sixers in the late 60s and at some point went to the Bulls and was part of their strong teams in the early 70s. So
I want to say 73. Let me look that up
I thought that was a little earlier. I thought it was a little bit earlier.
Oh, no, I'm way wrong. No, 70. Okay, so he was there. Okay, for all the 70s. Gotcha. Then. So, okay, so this entire decade was a Bull. Okay.
Yeah, so, he's a guy who, really good player, but you kind of overlooked. He'll be definitely a guy we have to dive into a little bit because he has an interesting story. And we've talked here and there about that 70s Bulls being one of the better teams that never made a finals, but we're basically in a historically great Western Conference dealing with incredible Lakers teams and incredible Bucks teams, and just didn't have the room to get past that point.
A few other kind of numbers. I think this is interesting. We get a few different names here. Points per 36 minutes. And this is, I did a minimum of 300 games when I was looking at this because it gets kind of wacky, especially if you only do a certain amount of games. But number one on the list, Walter Davis.
Yeah.
26.7. Walter Davis.
The Greyhound, getting there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's real. It's just cool. Yeah, it's just a guy that you wouldn't have. I off the top of my head, I would not have thought would be on this list, but it makes a lot of sense that he is because the guy scored a ton of points and in great efficiency. George Gervin, 26.3. David Thompson, 25.2. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar jumps on here again at 24.9. And then John Drew at 24.9, exactly teamed with Kareem in terms of points per 36. So it was an interesting collection of guys there.
Yeah, I don't think John, Walter Davis was, great Phoenix player. Actually joined after he came in on 78, so he joined late in the decade. He was more of an 80s player, but he had enough games, he counts to be part of this. But he is a he's a really good he's obviously a really good scorer. He's six-time All-Star and kind of got involved in a drug scandal in the late 80s, so his that kind of hurt his how he's remembered with the even though he was a really one of the better Suns players of all time. John Drew, he was a really good player for the for the Hawks in the late 70s. They actually had some pretty good teams after they got rid of Pete Maravich. and then was involved in the Dominique Wilkins trade that netted the Hawks that pick. So that was nice.
And netted Utah John Drew. So yeah. Hey, cool.
Didn't do much in Utah by then. But yes.
They also got Simon Williams, isn't it?
Yeah,
too. I think so, they would agree.
Yeah, I mean, once you know, obviously, like the top stars are. Obviously, Kareem is very well known, although he's better known for his 80s stuff than his 70s stuff. We have a whole podcast on Kareem's life and career on the 70s, which we'll be kind of retweeting and showing some of, you know, getting some of our old 70s episodes out there. So people, you know, if you haven't checked it out, and if you're waiting for new episodes in this series, you can always check those out as well, just to, you know, get a sense of some of the 70s stuff that, you know, we're going to try to avoid, you know, repeating ourselves too much. So it's good to listen to those episodes too, as well. But, you know, there's a lot of interesting things to unpack about Kareem's career. And we're going to talk about, you know, the Bucks and some of the things involving Kareem in this series. But, yeah, obviously, by far the star of the decade. So, you know, and obviously Dr. J is well known. You know, a handful of these other guys are well known. But there's a lot of guys who just aren't really, you know, they didn't have the longevity, or they didn't really have, you know, a power team to they played for. A lot of the ABA teams, you know, don't exist anymore. So the constituencies that were there, you know, for them, you know, they're not really remembered because their legacy isn't, you know, living on through an active team, you know, stuff like that. There's a lot of, you know, lost guys, obviously not as much video of a lot of these guys, you know, there was more instability. So guys weren't sticking around with one team for as long, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's a big reason, you know, what you're sort of talking about there is a big reason why we chose the 70s to do this with, because it's such an interesting decade of, you know, there's so much parity where there's not really a dominant dynasty team. And there's, you know, this whole other league that comes and forms, and there's these teams and these franchises that build up, and then they just go away in, you know, a blink of an eye, sometimes overnight, sometimes, and like, they just, all that history is gone, and the league was kind of bad at, like, video, and it didn't have a TV deal, and you know what I mean? Like, there's just so much weird stuff that it's just a decade where a lot of these big names, you don't hear. I mean, David Thompson, you just do not really get a whole lot about it. George Gervin, you hear a little bit about, but just maybe not as much as you should, and maybe as much as we, you know, you and I even, we're probably guilty of it too, of just not really getting into that decade as much as we probably should. And that's a big part of why we're doing this, is because it's just such a mysterious, lost decade in basketball history and professional basketball history. So it's just really cool to kind of dig into these names and these players and franchises and these stories, because it's just a fascinating decade in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so you looked at assists per 36 minutes as well.
The number one guy is probably, for people that are astute basketball fans, you might be able to get this, and I'll give you a few seconds to think about it if you can, but it is Kevin Porter at 10. Exactly 10 assists per 36 minutes is an incredible number. Art Williams, he's second at 9.4. Slick Watts at 8.4. John Lucas is at 8.3. And then Lenny Wilkins at 8.3, which is interesting enough that he's there. And then even in a few years, he also won a championship this year. So, yeah, he's a rare chance of coaching a championship and being in the top five of assists per 36. In the
same decade, yeah. It was sort of the end of his career, but he was a player coach early on with the Sonics, played with Cleveland for a while as well before retiring and coaching the Blazers and then coaching the Sonics again for the championship season. But John Lucas was the number one pick in for the Rockets, and he was a really good guard, ended up going to Golden State in a deal for Rick Barry, basically compensation for Rick Barry, which kind of honestly was, you know, kind of hurt a promising you know, Barry was obviously at the end of his career, and losing a, you know, young skilled point guard in Lucas kind of honestly probably set the Rockets back. They had other issues as well, but and Slick Watts was a sort of a cult hero for the Sonics in the 70s. I think he may have been one of the first players to popularize the headband. I know Wilt had it, obviously, but Slick was one of the I believe, if I remember correctly, was also one of the pioneers of for headbands. So
And with the awesome, like, and he of like the bald guy wearing the headband too is a really cool thing as well, because usually we had seen a lot of, you know, and especially for a long time, we saw a lot of the guys that wore the headbands were like the big hair and the big afros and that sort of stuff to kind of keep. He was bald, and no, man, I'm wearing the headband regardless. So that's pretty cool. Like, we the lineage of Baron Davis, so that's
exactly.
That's a good way to, yes. Always a good way to look at it. But all right, rebounds per 36 minutes. Again, 300 games is kind of the minimum here, so we can look at it. Mel Daniels at 15.3, of course, huge part of the Indiana Pacers in the ABA.
Two-time MVP also.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'll of course talk a lot about that franchise and a lot about Mel Daniels in specifics later in this series. And Sven Nader at 15 rebounds per game. My dad's favorite player of all time, Tom Boerwinkel, at 14.5. Moses Malone at 14.4. And then Artis Gilmore at 13.8. So not a lot of names that I think surprise you, but Sven Nader and Mel Daniels being 1 and 2 is maybe in a little way kind of surprising.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously Moses is well known. ABA fans should know Mel Daniels. I mean, he was one of the best players. You probably one of the 10 best players in ABA history, two-time MVP, led the Pacers to 3 championships and 5 finals appearances. Sven Nader probably not quite as well known, but he was a stout rebounder who kind of bounced around in the ABA and the NBA. And Boerwinkel for the Bulls, and Malone and Gilmore, of course. But yeah, the names on not a lot of other than Moses, not necessarily household names to most people. And Moses again, most of these guys who are famous from the 70s also had a prominent career in the 80s when obviously the NBA's popularity turned around.
Absolutely. And then last one that we're going to look at here real quick, effective field goal percentage. And this is where you get the very oddities, and that's mostly why I've put it in there. I don't know if I would necessarily use this as a measure of the best players of the decade, but we get Johnny Green at the top at 57.5. Old Johnny Green, he was a Royals power forward.
Yeah.
And I think his career was winding down, I believe.
Yeah, I think we found out that he was the first player to actually last to age 38 in the NBA. So yeah, he managed to be, was a great, was an efficient shooter at least. And he was a smaller guy too, but he was a forward. It wasn't like he was a big man just shooting at the basket. I mean,
yeah,
he was making, he was making shots presumably from at least some range, because obviously if he's a forward, he's not going to be he's not going to be camped out right underneath the basket all the time. So yeah, he's sort of an interesting one, even though really he's kind of part of the early part of the decade, mostly a 60s player.
And then Bobby Jones comes in second at 56.9. Of course, he had an ABA run with Denver before moving on to Philadelphia, where he's probably more famous to most people, and being a key cog in that 80s team and that the dynasty with Moses and Julius and all those sort of guys.
But he was a stout defender at all times. And he and Dr. J had a big rivalry, at the end of the ABA. He and Denver and the New York Nets faced off in the final ABA finals, and they battled each other in that time. And then Denver was really good for a few years in the NBA before Jones was traded. And then of course, they became, they went to several finals in the early 80s. And we're going to kind of get into, even though they went into the 80s, we're going to kind of get into a little bit of the evolution of that 76ers team, because I think the way that they evolved from the 70s into the 80s is really interesting and kind of reflective of the changes in the game and the changes in Dr. J specifically.
Yeah, and then the next two guys are probably not very big surprises if you're familiar with effective field goal percentage and familiar with the 70s as well. Artis Gilmore at 0.558 effective field goal percentage, and then Kareem Abdul-Jabbar just behind him at 0.555. So those are two guys, of course, close to the rim, scorers, the elite scorers, the elite big men of the 70s, with Artis doing a lot of the work in the ABA and then, transferring that over to the NBA as well, and then Kareem just being, Kareem. So it's, towards later. And then the final name on this effective field goal top five, and I think quickly rising up one of my favorite players of all time, Goo Kennedy.
Yes, indeed.
At 0.548. He played for the Dallas Chaparrals, the San Antonio Spurs, the Spirits of St. Louis, the Utah Stars, and Houston in the ABA. So he bounced around a little bit, old Goo Kennedy, but he made it on this list, damn it.
Apparently, he and his wife have raised over 40 foster children over the years. So that's a pretty neat.
Wow. All right. Go.
Yeah. So, I honestly don't know much about Goo Kennedy other than, his name's popped up here and there when looking, at results and looking at things. But as far as learning much about him personally, we haven't gotten there yet. So we'll see if we, it's a great name. So so we'll see.
It's Eugene, by the way, in case people are curious.
Eugene Goo Kennedy.
So his birth name is not Goo, but I don't know how he got to Goo.
It happens. Anyway, so So yeah, that's kind of, those are a little dive into the numbers. We're going to try to keep a lot of these episodes short and sweet, just so some of them will be more hardcore, more deep dives, but a lot of them we're going to just try to keep easy and light, so that it's the summer, it's the off season. You know, you don't want to work too hard. You just want to kind of give you like a sense of the history of things. So we're gonna. We got a lot of things planned. You know, we got a lot of mysteries to discover, hopefully solve, and at least investigate. So, everyone can check us out at we're on Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back NBA. You can find our podcast home at hardwoodparoxysm.com. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. So if you use those services, please give us a rating and review. It helps other people find us and it makes us feel good about ourselves. So, Rich, thanks so much for doing this. And everyone, until next time, thanks for listening.